Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC. Well, Mac, Vista's got me feeling down, so I've written a little song called The Vista Blues.
Oh, I'd love to hear that sometime. I have to read.
So many users are leaving me, and they ain't coming back. Vista's got issues, and it's so glitchy, they're leaving me for Mac.
Nice touch.
Podcast, the best 30 plus minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Join me today. He's back from his Italian vacation, but for some reason, he's still in his Speedo and gold chain necklace. Lewis Wallace is here.
Talk about me. Italian? Come on, man. This time it was the UK.
Oh, that's right. You literally just told me that.
Yeah, the UK, man.
I proceeded to immediately forget. Sorry.
God, it's great to be back.
I still wear a Speedo and a gold chain.
Yeah, it makes it even stranger. Why are you in that outfit? Also with us, he's the inventor of the WWDC drinking game, where he takes a swig each time a new feature is announced, and this year it almost killed him. Leander Caney is here.
Hello.
I'm just joking. You barely had a buzz, huh? It's not for lack of drinking either.
Right, I know. Yeah, it was a 12-pack, but I didn't really break.
Well, I took a 12-pack, but you know, I had 2.5 hours, so it's like I barely felt it. Well, this episode, per the title of the actual episode that you've just downloaded, this is our WWDC 2019 reactions. And I think I can speak for all of us when I say this is probably the best WWDC keynote that we've seen in a long time. This is the best one that I've ever seen. Leander, how did you feel about it?
Yeah. We did a story about it. We debated about the headline. It was like best WWDC ever. And then, we really thought that. But then, of course, you know, we got a little bit of pushback. So, you know, then debating it the next day, we changed it, you know, in years. And I think for sure it's definitely been the best keynote in years.
Yeah, it's certainly the best one I've seen. I don't know. Maybe there have been better ones in the past. I don't recall one being better than this as far as the pacing and the excitement. It was 2.5 hours, but the entire thing from start to finish, even 2 hours in, I felt like it had just started.
Yeah, and everything was consequential, wasn't it? And even the fact that German spoiled the whole thing, you know, like he almost had the pitch deck, didn't he? And he had Tim's keynote right there, and he was just reading off of it all the features. I mean, it still made for a really enjoyable presentation. And he didn't even get some of the major stuff, you know, which is the Mac Pro.
Well, the Mac Pro, was a huge surprise, which it's surprising we didn't see any leak about that at all. But if you had listened to our show the week prior, you would have known this was going to be announced now, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Because we used the power of reason in our minds to figure out that Apple was indeed going to be announcing this. And thank you to listener Johnny something. I don't remember who his last name was. I'd have to look at my notes. But for giving us that great tip. Before I dive into the first topic here, let me go ahead and say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. Squarespace.com/cultcast. Do you need a website? Do you have a business? Maybe you are a new college graduate. You're trying to promote your skills to people, which if you are a new graduate, especially if you're in the world of tech, having a website is a impactful, great way to promote yourself and your skills to potential employers, because when you apply for jobs, you know they're going to Google you. You know, so you want to make sure that you send all those pictures of you drinking and partying down into the Google rabbit hole and promote all the positive content that you want people to see, the content that you create. You want them to see that stuff, not the other stuff that's floating out there. And building a Squarespace website just couldn't be easier. You go in there, everything's drag and drop, and yet it's very powerful. You'll be surprised when you go in there to see how many different kinds of media you can add, and you can move everything around and make the entire website look uniquely yours. And yet it will have taken you no time at all. You'll be up and running with a website in a flash. Check it out at squarespace.com/cultcast. Sign up for the trial, build a website, see how you like it. And if you like what you have at the end of the trial, you can use code cultcast at checkout. You'll save 10% off your first purchase. And you'll get a free domain name and an extra discount if you purchase a year of service upfront, which I recommend, at squarespace.com/cultcast. Okay, let's talk about WWDC 2019, our reactions. We already kind of did this. We started it, you know, 5 minutes ago. But I walked away. I honestly don't think I have any complaints about anything that was announced. It was just one thing after another. Dense, relevant, impactful, fun. The pacing was perfect. And I like that there were a lot of new faces on the stage, but the new faces did a good job. It didn't feel like it was contrived anyway, which I feel like is always what happens when they bring up new people, is these new people are really trying hard and it comes across as they're trying hard. So they use a lot of like whisper power phrases like, this is going to be a really great feature. Like Tim Cook does that sometimes. It's like,
okay.
Got
me so excited.
Yeah, exactly. It's like that. I'm forcing myself to be excited about this.
Tim had a bit of that. I noticed his like, and his introductory one was a little bit over the top.
Yeah, he can't shake it. That's what he does every single year.
Well, he must have gone through that like 15, 20, 30, 40 times. Who knows? You know, because they rehearse like crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's one thing to do it in rehearsal, but then you go up there in front of 100 million people watching online and in person, and it's a lot harder to do in person.
Yeah, and it could come off a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and you're trying to build that energy. I mean, I get it. You're trying to build that energy, so I get what he was trying to do. I also got to say, I did miss Phil Schiller.
Yeah, I thought Phil Schiller
should have been out there for the Mac Pro reveal. He deserved that. Phil Schiller earned that.
If he was still there, yeah. I know that's funny.
He's definitely still there because I saw that people had interviews with him after the
keynote
was
over. And he got up on
stage
for a picture too, yeah.
He did, okay. Yeah, that was odd, wasn't it? They had that new guy, which I actually really like that new guy. I don't know what his name is, but he is really natural and calm and not annoying. So I like that Apple's bringing this guy up there to do the presentations because he's really great. But
yeah, and Craig does a lot of work too, doesn't he? I mean, Craig. Oh, here's Craig again.
Yeah, he is good. And he didn't do any cringe dad jokes this year, which I was happy to see. Some of his jokes sometimes are
as bad as mine.
Well,
his one joke was really actually super funny. What was that one? Help me out, Lewis.
I don't know. Talking about putting everything into iTunes.
Yeah, that was funny. Yeah. I burst out laughing. Yeah.
I don't remember it. What did he say?
Oh, he was going on about like, you know, how iTunes started out doing this, and then we added this feature, and then we added this, you know, over the years, right? And, you know, now, mm-hmm. you know, I can't even remember the actual details of it, but it's like, oh, well, you know, now we got it so we could, you know, send messages in it, you know, and all this stuff, you know, it's just like,
we're out of email.
Okay, that's
nailed
pretty funny.
It.
That's actually pretty funny. Okay. I must have missed that part. Because I was, you know, furiously taking notes on all the other good stuff.
It was not a one-liner. It was quite a lengthy build-up to a good joke.
Right.
Man, he's getting good at this, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's genuinely charismatic and funny.
He really is.
And natural, too. You know, like, he does seem very, very natural.
He's also super good at bringing people up. And, I you know, something about having him up there and then people come up and feel natural. And then he's, you know, he's like the MC. He's awesome at it.
I was just going to say that. He's a great MC, isn't he?
Do you like it, you know, like, because it used to be all Steve, right? It was just Steve. And occasionally they'd bring out some third-party developers. And occasionally Phil Schiller would come up, but you know, really, it was like the Steve show. And I don't know, you know, I quite like it, the fact that it's a bunch of different people up there. I mean, Steve was really great and magnetic, you know, and very, very charismatic. But it's good, I think, you know, they've really hit their stride. I think the keynotes are, is as good as any that they've ever done, even despite, you know, not having Steve Jobs to do them anymore.
I do miss Steve, though.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I like the Steve keynotes,
right?
Where he just did the whole thing because you, like you said, he's magnetic. He goes up there and you're glued to him the entire time.
Yeah. He was very. But I've actually sat through. And this is heresy, and people are going to hate me for this. But I sat through a bunch of ones that were really boring. I hate to say it, and very inconsequential too. You know, like I remember one time he was. I think postcards when they added. Was it in iTunes? I think it was in iTunes. They had postcards. You could send postcards.
In iTunes? No.
Oh,
you mean
God,
photo booth?
What was the app? There was
maybe
an
photo
app.
Booth.
I don't think it was photo booth. Maybe it must have been photos. Yeah, it must have been photos.
It definitely wasn't iTunes. That would have been totally bizarre.
You could send like these digital postcards, and
I do. Vaguely
he was going
this.
On and on for hours about these stupid postcards, and
it's got to be hard though. I mean, think about this show, right? So some weeks we have tons of stuff to talk about, and some weeks there just really isn't very much to talk about at all, and we have a rhythm to this show. I can look at all the different lengths of all the different shows, and they are invariably within 5 minutes of each other ending, right? So whether we have a lot or a little to talk about. So you end up just expanding and talking more about topics that are inconsequential when there's not a lot to talk about. And that's kind of what they have to do up there. If they go up there and there isn't a lot to say, they end up spending 20 minutes talking about Photo Booth, and it just is kind of boring. And you're like, okay, you could have just sent an email about this, and we could have been good, right? But they did a keynote, because they got to do a keynote at least once or twice a year.
Some of the stuff, I think, you know, he's generally excited about. Like, you know, like, he really does get a kick. That was the thing about Steve, is that he really used to get a kick out of this stuff, and he was, like, you know, the number one fan of what his own company was producing. And you can see it with the hardware and the software, you know, like, he was absolutely delighted with a bunch of this stuff. That's the thing I think that's missing, I think, from some of these other folks. You know, you can tell, like, you know, because it's kind of over. His enthusiasm and excitement came through, and it was very genuine, and was actually the basis, I think, for a lot of what he did. You know, like, he really was jazzed and psyched to show this stuff. And when it came to, like, the iPhone, you know, the presentation with the when he unveiled the iPhone, you know, it's really tangible. And this is what I think really made him apart. You know, like, some of these, you know, the presenters now, you know, they rehearse it, and you can tell they're kind of faking it.
Yeah.
I mean, they've gotten better. You know, like, if you look at Tim when he first, you know, when he first took over, like, you know, what is it, 7 years ago now, you know, like, he was so wooden, so uncomfortable. He would say, I'm so excited to be here, but you could tell he was absolutely not excited. He was absolutely hating it. And he's gotten a lot better. Like, I think, not this one, but the presentation before, whatever that was actually quite, was a pretty good Tim Cook one.
In a way, you have to be a natural entertainer to be up there.
Yeah.
And you have to be kind of an actor too. You have to be able to invoke your feelings over in situations where the feelings wouldn't normally exist. Because if you rehearse something 40 times, that excitement over a specific feature or a piece of hardware or something, it's gone. You've talked about it 40 times.
I don't know. I was actually reading an interview with an actor. Of course, I can't remember who it was. But they said the more they practice, the easier it becomes.
Really?
And the more the true emotion comes through. I don't know anything about acting, so I don't know if there's any actors here and listening, you know, if that's true or not. But I thought that was really interesting. I was reading an interview with an actor, and they said that they'll practice and practice and practice, and actually, you know, like, they think that it's become less naturalistic the more they practice, but it actually becomes more naturalistic.
I guess it depends on who you ask, because I know Daniel Day-Lewis will do exactly that. He will become a character and live as that character for months until the filming is over. But then you had actors like, what's that guy's name? I want to call him Alex Heath, but it's not. It's Heath Ledger. Heath Ledger, who would just go into it. He would be totally normal before a shoot. I read an interview about this on the shoot for Batman. He would be totally normal, but dressed as the Joker. And then, boom, action, and he becomes the Joker just like that. And then there's Daniel Day-Lewis, who, you know, stops showering so that he could look more like Abraham Lincoln.
Apparently
for a month.
Apparently,
for
months, he was Abraham Lincoln. Good day, sir. And how peculiar would that be?
Yeah, so I just, and both of them are phenomenal. So I guess it just depends on how you're built. But anyway.
And talking about, you know, we were talking about earlier about, well, some of the most consequential stuff was the last stuff they talked about, you know, all the developer stuff.
Yeah.
Like the new tools in Swift. And I saw a lot of talk on Twitter about that and how consequential that was.
Yeah. And in fact, it was so poignant. When they were talking about all the Swift stuff, I started thinking, I actually want to learn Swift now. This is making me want to actually learn how to develop iPhone apps in Swift, which is not something I've ever
Have
really
you played
thought
around
about
with
before.
Swift Playgrounds?
No, I haven't, but I want to.
Yes, me too.
I just have to have a first grader teach me how it works.
Well, quick, I'm going to ask my kids too. I'm going to ask my kids to show me how it works. Your kids could probably help you out as well, right? Even
though yeah, exactly. I was my 2-year-old, and she probably has it figured out already.
Right.
No, but seriously, it looks so streamlined, and it's been iterated upon so many times now. It seems like it's actually coming into its own. And to see so many developers excited about it got me to be excited about it.
Yeah, that's funny. I had the same thing. It made me want to be a developer too.
We should become developers.
Let's be developers.
Yeah, and then we can do like a developer podcast, which I'm sure will be really popular because we'll be such good developers.
Good thinking. All right, that's our plan.
All right, let's talk about the Mac Pro, since that was obviously the jewel in the crown of WWDC this year and was a huge surprise and was paced perfectly. It was exciting up until that point, but that took it into overdrive, I thought. I mean, it was like a breathless presentation. And when they revealed it, Leander, what was going through your mind?
I was impressed, but of course it's like, it's a crazy machine, you know, this is not for anyone like me or you, or, you know, this is like a real beast. It replaces, like, you know, Rent-A-Farms at Pixar, that kind of thing. If you need that on your desk, I mean, it's way, way too much computer for someone like me.
Yeah.
And for most other people. And I saw a lot of people complaining about that. And, you know, in fact, I think it's weird because they've gone from this really, you know, this malign machine that you couldn't upgrade to the previous Mac Pro, and was considered, you know, sort of underpowered, right, and unupgradable, and everything that the developers hated. And then you get this checklist of all these things that they wanted, and they come up with a machine that looks just like the old cheese grater Mac Pro, the G5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember I was at the keynote when they introduced that, and I got to talk to Johnny Ive about it, and he gave me this like 20-minute tour of the machine. And I remember when they pulled that out, like there was this weird hush fell over the crowd because it was just so, it was like looking, and I wrote this at the time for Wired, like it was like looking at the alien slab in 2001 Space Odyssey, right? Hmm. All these monkeys, you know, were all like putting their hands on it. There's this thing from that just represents like this crazy power and mystery, you know, of computing. It had that aura around it. And this one doesn't, you know, didn't really have the same reaction, did it? I think because I don't know. I guess, you know, the times have changed, but it's kind of too much. Most of the reaction to it was like, it's too much computer. People complain about the price, especially the price of the stand, $1,000, which is kind of crazy. But you know, I think everyone, all the complaints about it, like, you know, these are the people who that machine is not made for.
Yeah. The thing about the stand, too, at first I thought it was crazy. It's $1,000 for a stand. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought this isn't crazy at all, because you're not just paying for functionality here. You're paying for beauty. This is a piece of art. And this product is marketed to people who are willing to spend money for well-designed, beautiful products. And there's nothing out there like this that exists. And if you can afford to spend $6,000 on a computer and then another $5,000 or $6,000 on a monitor, what's extra $1,000 on a stand? Yeah. That's like telling a guy who buys a Ferrari that it's ridiculous to spend an extra, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 for some specific enhancement on the car or something. And of course, it doesn't matter. You're already spending that much money. You're looking at a whole different class of product. It doesn't matter. Spending $1,000 on a stand doesn't really sound like a big deal to me.
Yeah, I think the aesthetics of it is kind of silly, right? I think it should be more utilitarian at that kind of, you know, at that level, because I don't. This is sort of like, it's a professional tool, isn't it? And I think professionals are kind of a little more accommodating for something to be a more utilitarian. You know, like the rack mount option, for example. You know, yeah. I mean, that's not going to be put on anyone's desk, is it? It's, you know, because like with the consumer machines, you know, they're going to go in places where, in people's living rooms and in people's, you know, maybe on front desks and stuff like that. They're going to be a little more visible, and aesthetics are more important. But I think in a professional setting, you know, like aesthetics aren't so important. But
you know, I don't know. It depends. I mean, if you're running a design studio and people walk in and see all these beautiful Mac Pros everywhere,
yeah,
that's going to raise your hourly rate, I think. It's going to make you look a lot cooler. And looking cool is important when you're trying to charge people to do projects for them. It makes you look like you have great taste.
Millions,
you know?
And millions
that's
of
worth
dollars,
something,
yeah.
I think. Lewis, your thoughts?
Oh yeah, man. I rarely sit around thinking, geez, I want a computer, but man, I came away from that going, I want one of those. And I don't even need one of those at all. There's no just literally no reason on earth. I just want the power, man. I want the power.
I get it. I want the power as well.
Yeah, well, you know, you want what, have a 30, how many, what was the number, maximum number of cores?
28.
1.5
terabytes of RAM. Yeah. I might need that for you open up a few more tabs.
Actually, that might be the reason you should get it. You could have like 400 Chrome tabs open. Imagine that.
Yeah.
That's your ultimate dream, actually. You'd never have to restart again. Well, when they rolled this thing out, I thought, wow, Apple nailed it. This thing looks beautiful. It looks functional. Every detail has been carefully considered. It's as powerful as it is beautiful. And I got a little sentimental, I have to be honest. This is what I knew Apple was capable of doing, and this is everything that I was hoping Apple would include in the Mac Pro, but I never thought they would actually do it. I thought they were going to go with that modular Mac Mini design, which
thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, thank God.
And all the rumors were totally wrong.
Right.
They were completely wrong, but they were also right. I mean, this Mac Pro is modular in a way. There's modules, those MPX modules exist inside of the actual machine, but we got a tower. We got a tower. I never would have guessed. I never would have imagined that's what we were getting. It's industrial grade. And the thing that is also surprising is we've at least I have always been saying, I want Apple to make products for Apple for actual pros, right? And Tim Cook, this was Tim Cook saying, hold my beer, y'all. And he gave us a machine that actually leapfrogged my expectation of what a pro even is. Like you said, Leander, this machine isn't made for prosumers. It's made for actual pros, people that make movies, people who need to have insane levels of power. And for most people, I think, as you pointed out, this machine is going to be way too much. I consider myself to be somewhat of a pro, but by this standard, I am just a mere pleb. I'm not even the same class as this machine. It's too much. I mean, you can get it with 8, 12, 16, 24, 28 cores. It can support up to 1.5 terabytes of RAM, 6-channel RAM. Totally absurd. It has a 1.5 kilowatt power supply that's 1,500 watts. So in some households, this is going to be all your circuit can handle. It might even blow your circuit if you have like a toaster plugged in and this on the same circuit. It's going to blow your circuit. You're not even going to be able to turn it on, right?
Blackout gate.
You guys got like a 250 watt special line just for this machine.
Exactly. It supports AMD's most cutting edge GPUs. In fact, the GPU that they announced in this machine, AMD revealed on the same day because it didn't even exist. The Vega 2 and the Vega 2 Duo didn't even exist before Apple announced these on stage. So cutting edge components. It has it supports Apple's new Afterburner card, which I was doing some reading on to figure out what it even was. It's this new product that Apple built for the Mac Pro. And if you're a video editor, this is really intriguing. It allows you to offload all of your video encoding, especially with ProRes and stuff, to the Afterburner card. So it frees up your CPU entirely. So it's not constantly chewing through video as you're video editing, which is a huge shift, and allows you to free up all of your or most of your CPU cycles to do other things that you're working on. So that's going to be really powerful if you edit video. This machine, in my opinion, has all the right moves. It's a centerpiece. It's a jewel in Apple's lineup, and it shows again what they're capable of. This is Apple. I know I'm just drooling all over this thing, but it shows what Apple is actually capable of doing. And we don't get products like this very often. I think it's a very special product in their line, and unfortunately, I just can't afford it. It's $6,000, you know, for the base model.
When did the pre-order start?
Yeah. Fall. Oh, they didn't actually say, did they? It's just going to be released in fall.
Do you see how skimpy the storage was? That was kind of weird.
That was the one thing I was going to complain about. For a $6,000 machine, you get
125
gigabyte SSD. Yeah, right. No, it's 256, but come on, TC. 256 for a $6,000 machine?
Well, is this because they must assume that people are going to plug a giant RAID into this thing?
Well, even so, that's embarrassing. 256 God, for a $6,000 machine.
Oh my God.
That's because you only need enough for the enough for your basic.
For the OS, and that's it. OS, I guess.
And
okay,
plus some apps, right? And that's it, you know, because all of the content is going to go into some giant RAID somewhere.
Yeah, in fact, there is an accessory they have listed on the Mac Pro page from Promise, and it is an internal 32 gigabyte SSD RAID that you can buy as one of those MPX modules, and they just put it in. So your RAID exists inside of the actual
computer.
But
only 32 gigs?
Or 32 terabytes. So I, 32 terabytes, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
I was going to say. That's probably good for a couple of 8K streams, right?
Yeah, videos. Yeah. So they've got a lot of these components on the way. But still, the base model is kind of an odd creature. It in many ways is not going to be as fast as a iMac Pro, or even as powerful as an iMac. The iMac Pro have faster SSDs, and strangely, they include the same base GPU, the 580X, which is what is included inside of the Mac Pro. So I don't think very many people are going to buy the base Mac Pro, but it's odd that Apple would even offer it. Maybe they were trying to hit a specific price point, and so they were, you know, speccing it out so that they can meet a specific price. But when you look at what's inside of the Mac Pro, it's really kind of strange. The base level. Especially considering that the RAM, it supports 6-channel RAM. So ideally, it needs all 6 sticks to be present in order to run at full speed. but the base level Mac Pro only includes four sticks. So it's strange.
They've always been stingy with memory.
That's true.
Really,
but
odd.
That's pretty stingy, if you ask me. Like, they should have gone with 48 gigs at a minimum. That way you could have six matching sticks and run the machine at its maximum speed.
I think they do a lot of research into like price points and you know, like you said, that were, you know, how much would that add? Maybe another $500 or something like that. But you know, so that it brings the they probably want to hit the base price point of you know, $599, $599,
yeah,
rather than $650 or whatever it would be.
I think you're right,
but I don't know.
And then there's that XDR display, which looks incredible, but that thing is esoteric. It's extremely high end. People were scratching their head wondering why Apple was selling a monitor for $5,000 or $6,000 if you want the matte finish particulate coating that goes on the outside. And then you have the stand that's $1,000. But the more I research this, the more you realize this monitor is for people who are creating, you know, cinema level films and need to have specific types of displays across multiple computers so they can move their content from one computer to the next. And it competes with monitors that are $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. So Apple is competing with those high-end monitors. And I don't know if I should use the term value monitor here, since Apple is offering theirs so much less expensive than everyone else. But that's the level of performance this particular monitor is going for. So in that setting, it makes more sense that they're charging, you know, $6,000 for a monitor. But I don't even care if it's out of my reach. I'm happy that Apple went for it and gave and built this high-end pro experience, even if I can't afford it.
Right.
I'm still happy that they did it.
I know. You know, it's just they should pay attention to the Mac again, you know, and to mm-hmm. pros as well, which, you know, two very important constituencies, you know, and you know, arguably have got Apple where it is today. So it's good to see them taking care of those folks, and it's not, you know, it's not forgotten. It's not a dying legacy business. It's pretty, you know, significant, I think, that they're keeping this alive.
Yeah, and as you said, it shows that Apple is taking their pros seriously again. And you take this, you look at this Mac Pro, and then you look at the fact that Apple is releasing updates more quickly for the MacBook Pro
right.
to include the latest hardware additions in those machines. And I think, okay, maybe we finally hit an era where Apple is going to start focusing more on Mac and creating Macs that are more pro-focused than they have been in the past.
Well,
and that's a great thing. I'm excited for that.
There were two things that I think are worth mentioning. One is that people were complaining that there should be something, there should be like, they should have done this, but they should have done a lower-end version, like a sort of mid-range version of this
of
machine.
Of the Mac Pro?
Yeah.
Somewhere I totally agree.
Somewhere between the iMac and this monster. It'd be great.
They need like a Mac Pro Mini.
Yeah, right.
Something with a little less horsepower, yeah. but also a more accessible price tag.
Yes. Yeah.
Because if you want something with less power, you have to go with the iMac Pro or the iMac, and that doesn't really make sense. Why should you be forced into something with a screen just because you don't need something that is as powerful as the Mac Pro?
Right.
Especially considering the base level Mac Pro is not a good buy, in my opinion. You need to spec it up to a 16
right.
core, or you know, something with a little bit more horsepower, so it's not competing with the iMac Pro.
Right. And I saw the other thing I wanted to mention is that someone said, so I got to look this, I got to find this somewhere on Twitter. But there was looking through Twitter the other day, there was a guy who was comparing this machine, and when people were complaining about the price, he's saying, you know, well, if you can go to HP or you can go to Dell and you can spec out something similar machine, and it's actually quite, you know, it's fairly reasonably priced compared to, you know, what you can get from other vendors, and that some workstations, you know, will go even higher. Like, you know, I think HP is selling $100,000 workstations that are real crazy. But then at the end of the thing, he said, this is going to be the last machine this is the last of the workstations, because this stuff is going to go all in the cloud very, very, very shortly. Because it doesn't, you know, that cloud computing makes sense. If you want this kind of horsepower and this kind of like rendering power, there's already vendors, you know, cloud vendors that are offering that. And you rent it on a server. You know, all you need is the bandwidth to do it. So, you know, this guy was speculating that this is the last generation of workstations like this, which I thought was interesting.
I don't know. That's an interesting theory, but I still think we're so far away from having this cloud interactivity takeover for computers on our local networks or a machine right in front of you. There's a lot of problems with bandwidth reliability and just bandwidth in general. And then you have all these ISPs charging you for, they have data caps in place, right? Because they're all greedy and trying to make as much money from you as possible. So you have those issues all built into using cloud services. I just don't see adaptation happening that fast.
Right. And they've been talking about this. This has been predicted for a while, hasn't it?
I feel like we've been talking about this for years. You know? And here we are. We still want to have stuff on our SSDs.
You are kind of getting it, though. I mean, look at the announcement with the... your iPhone is now basically a PlayStation 4, isn't it? With I can't remember the name of the Sony app, but with the support for the DualShock controllers, mm-hmm. You know, you can and whatever the Sony app is, where you stream PS4 games now through to your iPhone. What's the app called?
I don't know what app you're talking about.
Sony has an official app, don't they? It's an official app for streaming PS4 games.
Yeah, I did hear what you're talking about. I heard about what you're talking about, but I don't remember the name of the actual app. But this is pretty popular. Valve has something similar as well, where you could stream content from your actual device that is playing the game to another another device and use that as like a second screen or something.
Well, I think aren't the games running? You know, isn't a lot of the games running on on Sony servers and it's streaming to your device?
Are you talking about Google's
Stadia
console?
Maybe I shouldn't talk about stuff I don't know about.
Are you sure it's Sony or maybe it was Google? Because Google announced a console that is going to allow you to do this exact thing.
Stadia.
Yeah, the Stadia. They're promoting it like hell right now, too. I'm curious to see how well it works, but there's always a problem with the lag when you have servers chewing through your content and then serving it to some client device. And I find that it never really works as reliably as just having the game installed on your own PS4 or your own Xbox or something. But
anyway, whatever. All right, yeah, maybe we should cut this shit out.
Yeah, I'm going to call it crap out. Okay, look. We need to talk about software features, too, because there's a lot. I have a whole list of stuff, in fact, I wanted to mention. And some of it's totally bonkers, like this Find My feature that they added. It seems simple. It's unbelievably complex. It's something that it looks like it was designed by the architect in the Matrix. And when you hear about it, I'll tell you about it. It's actually really cool the way the technology works. Before we do that, I want to say thank you to LinkedIn for supporting this episode. Hiring isn't as simple as putting an ad in the paper or posting to a job board. Not anymore. When you're juggling hiring with everything it takes your business to grow, it's important that you reach the right candidates at the right time. That's where LinkedIn comes in. More than 650 million members visit LinkedIn every day to make connections, learn, and grow as professionals, and discover new job opportunities. In fact, LinkedIn members add 15 new skills to their profiles and apply to 35 job posts every 2 seconds. That's how LinkedIn makes sure your job gets in front of the people with the right hard skills and soft skills to meet your requirements. Things like collaboration, work ethic, adaptability. LinkedIn does the legwork to match you to the most qualified candidates so you can focus on hiring the right person who will transform your business. To get $50 off your first job post, go to linkedin.com/cultcast. That's linkedin.com/cultcast to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions do apply. Okay, look, we spent like 45 minutes talking about the Mac Pro. I mean, just salivating all over it. Let's talk about software. Did you guys have any software features that really blew your gourd wide open and made you excited? Lewis, do you got a list of software features?
Yeah, man. It's all about Taptic Chimes.
Taptic Chimes? What?
Do you remember hearing
that? That sounds like something that Sting is good at.
No, that was actually true. It's like a little, it's like the old clock on the wall. What are those things called? The clock with the cuckoo clock. It goes off once an hour.
Or like a Godfather clock. Ding, ding! Or something.
Except it's a robin. A robin that they sampled or something for Apple Park.
Oh, I remember. That was totally weird, wasn't it?
That was goofy as hell.
And wait, what does it do? I don't even remember.
At the turn of the hour, it goes, a little bird noise.
I'm hoping you can turn that off.
Maybe it was a joke, and I just didn't get it. I mean,
I don't think they were joking. No one
laughed.
I don't
think so, but it sure seems, saying out loud, it actually seems hilarious. That'll be one feature that I'll not be turning on. Honestly, it's weird. I went back and watched the keynote again, and I'm like, man, it's just... It's the same thing I felt before. Boom, 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 feature, 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 feature. And honestly, the thing that I found the most like exciting about it all is like everything pushed everything forward. Mm-hmm. And everything is just a little bit better. I mean, as far as like actual specific things, I'm kind of intrigued by that noise app on the watch. That seems crazy to me. Like suddenly you've got this decibel meter on your watch that tells you, hey, it's a little too loud and you should put in some earplugs. I can't wait to wear that to a rock show.
Rock show? What about in my own house?
Right. I mean, it's just going to... Can you imagine you wear it to like a Motorhead concert? It's like ding, 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 ding. It starts shocking you or something.
Well, I turned on notifications for that, but it hasn't gone off yet, so...
Yeah?
We'll see.
You can get around some loud people.
Just wait until your next argument with your wife. It'll be going off like crazy.
That'll be hilarious. Like she's yelling at you and you're like, oh, honey, I'm going to need you to take it down a notch. My watch says you're loud.
Can I piggyback on yours real fast, Lewis?
Because
I was going to talk about this too. I think this app is really important, especially for young people who don't realize that you can damage your hearing and it will affect you later in life. I used to go to a lot of loud butt rock shows when I was younger. And I think I damaged my hearing. And I also went to a Guns N' Roses concert, I think like a year and a half ago, and it was so damn loud. It was actually hurting my ears. And my ears were ringing for days after that show. And you can damage your hearing. You can develop tinnitus, which is a consistent ringing in your ears that can literally drive you crazy. It's really horrible. You got to protect your hearing. And it was cool to see Apple give you something that could help you figure out if you're in an environment where you're hearing sounds that are too loud, because it's not always easy to tell.
Right.
And I hope people use it. I really do. I know this sounds like something a grandpa would tell you. Make sure you put on your earplugs. I used to laugh at people who said the same thing. Or I'd go to a show and see a guy with earplugs in. And I'd be like, look at that loser, right?
Yeah.
No, I was the loser. That was the smart guy.
Right.
That guy was protecting his hearing, and you can lose your hearing if you don't protect it when you're younger.
I think people I think there's a lot of people who are a lot smarter about that now, but I think this will be really good for showing people like, hey, you don't have to be at a giant rock concert for things to be loud. I mean, sometimes, and all that stuff is like, time versus level, right? So I don't know exactly how this noise app works. I haven't checked it out yet, but I'm assuming that it'll be smart enough to say, hey, you've been at this level for a certain amount of time. You know, pretty soon you're going to get to the point where your ear is going to suffer. Because it's all about time and level. So if it's 130 decibels, it's 5 minutes or whatever. But if it's 90 decibels, which doesn't maybe not seem that loud to you, it's if it's for 30 minutes. I don't know the exact times and levels, but I hope that it's another thing that the Apple Watch does that sort of in a smart way teaches you a little bit about health, right? Teaches you what you should be doing, alerts you. Hey, it's like the simplest thing of telling you, hey, you've been sitting on your ass for an hour. Right, you should stand up.
Well, that's what a lot of this stuff, the new health app, I was just looking at that this morning, and there's a whole bunch of stuff in there about your heart health, the number of stairs you climbed, the amount of activity you had. It's much, much better. And it's all about giving you that kind of feedback in a very simple, there's graphs and diagrams for almost every single one. And it's, to tell you, to give you that kind of feedback, that feedback loop.
And,
it's
and
really
trends,
nicely
too,
well
right?
done. Yeah, right.
Yeah. It looks, all that stuff to me, I mean, I love the Apple Watch and I love when they build more stuff into it that, I mean, that's like passive, right? I mean, you don't have to like download an app or do anything else. It's just kind of there. And it'll probably help your life be better. I mean,
And I think it shows the potential for the Apple Watch too. Because it's like it's just another feature that they've added, isn't it? That tells you about your body, about your environment, and helps you, live a healthier life. I think the potential for the watch is really huge, and this is a good example of like sort of really bringing it forward a big step.
Okay, Lewis, what else you got?
Well, just more broadly, I'm very excited about all the different apps that Apple did, the audiobooks, voice memos, calculator, all that stuff for the watch. But even more so, I'm excited that, they're really increasing the emphasis on the, third-party apps. They're putting an app store on the watch. Now, I'm not sure how that's going to work. That to me seems like maybe I'm not going to sit around searching for an app on my watch. But allowing them to be independent and giving developers new APIs and things that they can use, that's going to help, I hope, it help the Apple Watch app. God, that's hard to say. The Apple Watch app ecosystem grow.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And it's going to be exciting to see how people build apps for it now and see if they can create apps that are actually useful. Yeah. And hopefully we'll start seeing more apps pour in that are actually things that you'd want to use. Is that all you got, Lewis?
Oh, I could go on and on, man. I mean, I really like the look of the new CarPlay. I don't know if you ever use CarPlay. I actually bought a crappy, for my crappy car, I bought an old or a new CarPlay deck, and I love it. And I used it in a rental car. I had two rental cars in this last trip. One did not have CarPlay. I'm sitting there trying to see my phone. It's, in the little holder that I brought along with me. I could barely see it. There's glare. I was at the mercy of my wife, and oh, boy.
Sounds awful.
The next car had CarPlay, and I was like, oh, my God, it's night and day different. And now it's going to be even better. That looks awesome. I was very excited about all the performance boosts that they're doing. 30% faster Face ID unlock. Please, thank you. 50% smaller app downloads and 2 times faster app launch speeds in iOS. I mean, that kind of stuff gets me very excited. I love high performance. I like stuff to happen faster. The other thing that I thought was really awesome, and I'm sure this is on everybody's list, is that sign in with Apple service.
Yes, I have that on my list as well.
Yeah. I don't know. As soon as I saw that, I'm like, yeah, thank you. That is fantastic.
No one does privacy like Apple, and they really pushed privacy in this keynote. And this was one of the features that I was excited about as well, because you always have sign with Facebook, sign with Google. But I don't want those. I never know exactly what information they're getting when you do that.
Right.
And I don't trust Google. I don't trust App, or I don't trust Facebook with my data. I don't know how they're going to use it. And so to have the option to sign in with Apple and to be able to see exactly which items you can provide to the developer or to the website, and they give you that granularity that you can control, is something that I'm really interested in. I also thought it was really cool that you can create an email alias so that the developer or whatever website you're signing into doesn't even get your actual information, real email. That's cool.
That was like, oh my God, burner email addresses. So awesome. How many times do you sign up for something and all you want to do is go to a website, they force you to sign in for whatever reason, or maybe exactly. Think it's a good idea. Suddenly you start getting stuff from all these other people that it's just, oh my God, I get so much crap in my inbox. I when I saw that, I was so happy that Apple did this. And I mean, I know they're catching a little bit of flack for they're supposedly going to force everybody who uses any of these third-party things to put Apple on there as well. And they're even encouraging them to put them above the other options. But you know what?
I think it's supposed to. Isn't it not mandatory they have to put it at the top?
I believe at the top it's a strongly encouraged.
Yeah.
you know what? I would absolutely use that. And I've used the sign-in with Facebook more times than I care to admit. And I'm it's one of those things, like the more things that come out about Facebook and the more Facebook turns into a sort of a fetid nightmare, just going, geez, is there any way to revoke that? So I'm thrilled that Apple stepped up with this. And you said all these rumors that there was no mention of this anywhere, right? I mean,
I don't think
prior
so.
To
not
the show. This is a total surprise and a very welcome. And I mean, when it was like signing with Apple, I'm like, that's awesome. And then when they showed those email addresses and like, different email address for every person. Wow. I mean, that was shocking and fantastic. Talk about surprise and delight. I mean, that's what it was.
All right. Anything else on your list, Lewis? Or should we move on to Leander?
Oh, I think that's enough for today.
Okay. Leander, you take it away.
I just messaged you about this.
What?
I don't have a fucking list. I thought you said choose your favorite feature, so I was going to come up with one.
All right, well, just choose one then.
A list of one.
Can't you just, hasn't this gone on long enough? Why don't you just go into your list and I'll just.
What was your one?
A a list of one. Now I gotta know what your one favorite is.
He didn't even have one. That's what
you built
have,
it up.
Let the scrambling begin.
I like the new Photos app. I think that's really fantastic, really nicely laid out. And I like the what's it called? Look around in Maps. I was playing around with that. Yeah, that's really good.
That's much better than Apple's
version of Street View, right?
But it's nicer, it's a really good, elegant implementation of that.
Uh-huh.
You know, the actual animation of you moving through the street, Google's blurs and you jump from one spot to another.
It looks a lot better,
and the quality is amazing of the pictures. But I don't know how comprehensive it is. Like, it's definitely all around here in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And I was surprised, like, it has almost all the San Francisco streets. I don't think there's, from what I could tell, I think it was almost all the San Francisco streets and all the way down in the peninsula as well. So all around the Bay Area. But they don't have it in Chicago. They don't have it in New York. Mm. They don't have it in L.A. So,
soon.
Who knows? Yeah, coming soon. Well,
yeah, or anywhere rural.
It's a massive amount of work. I mean, didn't it take Google like 8-10 years to build their database for this kind of stuff? And now they're moving on into insider buildings. You know, so in Google, you can actually see insider buildings these days and inside of malls and stuff like that, inside airports. So I don't know. It looks like they've got a lot of catching up to do. But from what I've seen, from the stuff in San Francisco, it really is good.
What else do you got, Leander?
Well, I don't know. You know, like I thought it was going to be like in general. I don't know if you're going to give me a whole list.
Yeah.
I think the enhancements in it all seemed really, really worthy. It all seemed like really useful stuff. You know, I've got betas running on my phone, my watch, and my computer.
You have it running on your computer?
Not the computer I'm using now. My laptop. Okay, thank God.
I was
going
to say it's working pretty well.
And you know, like the laptop, I had to download. I had to use my laptop the reason I had to upload it. To upgrade the laptop or run the beta on the laptop is because you need it to install the betas on your other devices, or at least there are workarounds. But you know, like a couple of days ago when I did it, this is you know what I did to make it easy for myself. And you know, it's really actually pretty cool. You know, like to load the beta onto your iPad or iPhone. You know how you had to do it through iTunes and you had to choose the upgrade and you had to hold down option and then choose the IPSW file or whatever it is. Now you do that through the Finder. That's totally slick. It works really, really well. And it's actually really seemed, they all seem to be really stable so far. You know, like there's a few rendering problems on the iPad with, in the browser and also on Twitter when you hit links and stuff like that. Web rendering seems to be kind of slow. But apart from that, you know, it seems to work okay. A couple of apps, they give you warnings that it doesn't work. But you know, despite all the warnings Apple's been giving out, it seems to be somewhat stable betas.
Huh, because I keep hearing how buggy they are, especially iOS 13.
Yeah.
Like, I heard it was practically unusable.
I haven't had that experience so far at all.
Interesting.
I've got it running on my phone, you know? I mean,
yeah.
And a whole bunch of, like, really, I like all the nice features. You know, I was just down at the local supermarket, and it popped up a little dialogue saying, you know, they've got free Wi-Fi here. Do you want to connect?
Huh.
Which is the kind of useful thing that I think, you know, they do really well.
All those little interesting hidden features, too. That's the stuff I love hearing about. Okay, let me run through my list, because I got a big old list, and I'm going to go through it pretty quick, okay? I'm not going to talk about all this stuff, but I'm just going to... I was just taking notes and all the stuff that I walked away... I walked away from the keynote impressed with. The first and foremost, the Find My feature, so the new Find My feature, which is what you can use to find your iPhone, find your Mac, whatever. This is a crazy complicated feature that works beautifully and simply as you would expect, but has a ton of power and complication behind it, sophistication. And only Apple could create a feature like this, and you'll learn why in just a sec. So the Find My feature allows you to find your devices or where they are, even when they're not opened or being operated. So if your laptop is closed, you can still find out where it is. Let's say someone steals it. You can still find out where it is, even when it's closed and being carried around. And it works ingeniously by, well, let me back up. So you have to have two devices for the new Find My iPhone, Find My iPad, whatever you're trying to find to work, right? And then each device creates a public key and a private key. And when you activate the Find My feature, your device that you activated on will send the public key to Apple. And Apple will... we'll search its database of all the different locations it has pouring in from all around the world and match it up to the location that was broadcast by your device that was stolen. Well, how do they know where your device is? This is the crazy part. So your device that's stolen is still broadcasting its public key when it's being transported around, even though it's closed or not being used. And any Apple device within the area around it can pick up that signal and will transmit it to Apple servers after embedding its own location into some encrypted hash and then sending it to Apple. So you're using this network of Apple devices out there, which, what is there, like 1 billion devices floating around out there?
Yeah, in use, yeah, estimated.
To figure out or to help Apple identify where your location is. And the entire process is encrypted from end to end. I mentioned there was a private key and a public key. The private key is only something that your computer has. So Apple receives this location and they can access the public key, so they know it's your device, but they don't know where it is because the private key is what is used to unlock that location data. So not even Apple knows where your device is. Only you can know, which is why you need at least two devices for this feature to work. And it blows my mind that they were able to use cryptography and all this nuance and sophistication to allow your devices to communicate locations to each other anywhere in the world based upon other Apple devices in the area. No other manufacturer, I don't think, could create something like this because no other Apple or no other device manufacturer controls such a large ecosystem of products. They're all fractured, like Samsung controls Samsung, Google controls its own devices, right? But no other manufacturer has access to so many devices that you can just literally go anywhere your broadcast signals picked up.
I think, you know, some of the other ones, Tile does this as well, but it doesn't work that well because they don't have enough devices.
I thought you had to be within a specific vicinity of your Tile for it to work.
If you lose something, it says other Tile users can detect your device if it's lost somewhere.
But they have to be Tile users. Right.
Yeah.
So think about if you walk by 100 people with an iPhone, think how many people are Tile users. I'm going to guess maybe like 0.5%. I'm just guessing. It's not going to be very high.
Right. I think that's the problem, yeah.
Right. So now any Apple device can help you figure out where your other device is. Anyway, really cool. Bluetooth sharing. So now you can listen to music together on the same device. You could broadcast from one iPhone the stream of music to two different sets of AirPods. Or if you're watching a movie on a plane or something, you can both have your AirPods in and be watching the same content on an iPad. So that's a pretty cool feature. The photos updates that you mentioned, Leander, are long overdue. I was happy to see that you can now edit videos in the same way that you can edit photos, and you can do video rotation, which is something that's
people
been
have been waiting for like 10 years, right?
Right. It's literally the only reason anyone ever has iMovie installed on their phone is so they can rotate a video. Because when you pick up your iPhone, it's in vertical mode, and then you hit record before it realizes you're in horizontal mode, and now your videos are vertical instead of horizontal, right? So you got to go into iMovie and flip them over, and now you can do it within the actual Photos app. Another big one that I was excited to see, Xbox and PlayStation controller support for
TVOS.
People
lose their minds over that.
Wow. Wow. Did not see that one coming. This might actually make the
Apple Arcade, yeah.
Apple Arcade more appealing. It might make gaming on your Apple TV more viable because now you have a controller that literally everybody has, either an Xbox controller or a PlayStation controller that they can use to play games on their Apple TV with. Apple sign-in, we already talked about that. Let's see here. Sidecar, the second screen functionality for the iPad. Now you can use your iPad as a second screen. You can just shift your content from your Mac over to your iPad. This is going to be open to developers too. So you could think about Adobe giving you access to this second screen experience on your iPad while having the main experience open on your Mac. That was also really impressive. HomePod handoff support. So now you could walk in playing music on your iPhone and hover your iPhone near your HomePod and the music will poof, jump off your iPhone and start playing via your HomePod. That's pretty cool.
I'm going to try that out tonight.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear
how that
works.
See if that works. It probably doesn't work yet, but give it a shot. Another cool feature, Lewis, HomeKit cameras. So Apple is building these or making HomeKit available to different cameras so these cameras can upload your footage directly to your Apple account. And if you have, it depends on how much storage you have. on how many cameras are supported. If you are purchasing the 2-tier or the 2 terabyte a month or the 2 terabyte plan, you can host up to 5 cameras worth of footage, and the footage gets transferred to your iCloud account, and then it stays there for up to 10 days, and it doesn't take any of your data. So I'm excited to see how these new security cameras interact with HomeKit and let you view your content in the Apple ecosystem, because currently all that content is stored on the manufacturer's respective servers. Like if you have Arlo cameras, the content is on the Arlo servers, or if you use Nest, it's on the Nest servers, and now it's all going to be in your actual Apple ecosystem, which is going to be cool, and I'm excited to see how those two things interact with each other and what new features get enabled due to that new relationship. Let's see here. The Apple Watch Noise app, I already mentioned that. Some other cool little features. You can change the Wi-Fi network or Bluetooth or access Bluetooth devices directly within Control Center now. So if you press on the Wi-Fi icon within Control Center, you can change Wi-Fi networks, which is something that I've always wanted. You can also do the same thing with the Bluetooth icon. You can control which device you're connected to, which is really handy. Let's see. You could send unknown callers to voicemail automatically. This is also pretty well thought through. It will actually look for numbers within mail, within messages, or in your contacts list. And if you don't have a number within one of those three applications, it will just send it automatically to voicemail, which is something I have to do manually like 10 times a day because I get so many spam calls now. Do you guys get a lot of spam calls?
Yes.
I get them constantly now. Sometimes I get like 15 a day. It's totally out of control.
Nothing like that, but that's a lot.
Mine varies. Sometimes it's like 2 a day and sometimes it's like 15. It's all over the place. So anyway, I'll be excited to not have to press the power button twice to send directly to voicemail. The new volume animation. Yes, it's a small feature, but I like the way it looks. You can it has this little bar pop up right next to the volume icon or the volume buttons now, and you can actually touch and drag it up and down with your thumb once you've activated it. It doesn't cover the whole screen. The one thing I will note, though, that was a major bummer. I must be the last guy who is using Dashboard. Do you guys ever use Dashboard on Mac OS?
Right. Not for a long time.
Okay, I still use widgets. I have hot corners set to activate widgets. So when I drag down to the bottom right of my screen, it activates widgets and it will show me, you know, a clock. It will show me my deliveries app widget and a bunch of other widgets like the stock app. I use it all the time. It's super handy to get small little tidbits of information. Well, as of Mac OS Catalina, they have officially killed Dashboard. It will no longer be available. No one will be sad but me.
The funny thing about Dashboard is that is what inspired apps on the iPhone. When they were first developing the iPhone, that's where they took their inspiration
from
the Dashboard apps. Yeah, they wanted little tiny, you know, single function, simple apps, and they had this in Dashboard. You know, and that was the inspiration for the first apps on the iPhone.
Well, I must be the last guy left who's actually using it because I never hear anyone talk about widgets anymore. And they have like a widgets marketplace. They're all free, but you can go download widgets and all of them look like they were developed in like 2002. You know, like the web page is really old. All the widgets are very 90s looking. They are the socks and sandals and khakis of the technology world at this point. That's it. That's my entire list. Well, I've got some more stuff, but we can talk about it on future shows because this show is long. I think we should go ahead and wrap it up there. I'm getting hoarse. I'm hacking. I'm coughing. I can't do this anymore. So
we didn't even talk about iPad OS.
I know. Well, look, it took them 2.5 hours, Lewis, of nonstop talking to get through every single feature. There's no way we're going to do it in a mere 30 minutes, which is how long our podcast is.
Well, it's interesting as well that iPad OS has been split off. You know, obviously, like at the moment, there's not that many exclusive features, but it'll be interesting to see if they do fork it. Do you think they're going to fork it, or is that we should maybe talk about another time?
I hope so. I hope they do. All I'll say is I was hoping for more. I was hoping they would take it all the way, give us the hybrid, Tim, but instead they've doubled down on iOS for iPad, and I was a little bummed about that. But it also looks like they added some new features, so we should talk about that next week. Anyway, Let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. If there is some feature that we forgot about that you thought was cool, we're all on Twitter. We would love to hear about it. I'm at Airfon. Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. Leander is at L. Caney. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Look at that. Flawless victory, Leander.
Flawless victory?
Yeah, I got it exactly right this time.
Oh, right. Nice. Yeah, I totally tuned out.
That's because I wrote it down. I literally have it written out in the show notes. I'm like, I got to write it out because I completely forgot how to do the ending of the show. All right. Well, I'm glad you guys are very high energy. Let's go ahead and start this
show. Sorry, I'm looking at some other shit.
Leander's crashing already. I got some ales around there, Leander. Some liquid energy.
There's some in the fridge, but I abstain until the weekends.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even go drinking this week. I didn't go down to any WWDC parties.
Oh, no.
I was supposed to go to one last night. I really wanted to go to it because I like hanging out with the Mac Rumors folks.
Oh, yeah. I heard that they get crazy.
Oh, well, oh, Christ almighty. Yeah, it's just too far to go. And
yeah,
I didn't have anyone to drive me back.
Oh, yeah.
And there's not a lot of good public, transport options.
Well, I heard you missed some killer keg stands by TC.
TC?
Cook,
who's TC?
Cook. Johnny Ive grabs him by the legs and lifts him up, and he's just like, I'm going for it, y'all. They're spraying beer all over him.
Right.
Especially after last WWDC, he was probably off the chain.
Yeah.
Because they killed it. Killed it, y'all.
Right. Nailed it, yeah. he had some vintage WWDC cap with two beer cans attached to it.
I heard he had six sparkling waters too. He was getting crazy.
One after the other, chugging him. Chug, chug, chug.
But the night ended when he tried to crush one on his head, and it didn't crush at all, but it knocked him out.
I could totally see that happening.